The companions ran out of the shaft until the wildly lashing cable settled down and they could claim the smaller ones. The first tries were unsuccessful. Then Doc suggested braiding a couple of the thin wires into a slim cable, like the guitar string that Mildred had suggested. It took the rest of the day, but seemed to work fine. When J.B. shot off some trial arrows, the bolts slammed completely through a wood desk and became embedded in the cinder block wall behind. Ryan hefted the crossbow.
That'll do.
The weapon was slow to load and heavy to use, but the crossbow would silently chill from a distance, and that was all they wanted for it. They knew it was a gamble to check the tunnel before trying a Mattrans jump first, but the thought of going through the machine in their weakened condition was an even bigger risk. Even when well-rested and fed, it took a lot out of them. The storm outside was still raging, so of their two choices, it was the least dangerous. Mildred and Jack made some quivers from pieces of carpeting cut off the floor of the commander's office. Wire stitched them closed, and their belts made effective straps. J.B. placed the weapons on a table.
2 crossbows, 10 arrows. That's all we got. Too much of the stuff cracked when we tried machining it into shape. There are lots more shafts and feathers, but no more arrowheads.
Jack drew a knife.
Sharpen shafts. Better than nothing.
J.B. slid over a quiver, and the teenager got to work.
Many hands make light work.
Doc drew his own blade and started to whittle on the next batch of shafts. Rising from her chair, Christy got a bowl from the cabinet, filled it with water, and placed it between the men. She put a butane lighter beside the bowl.
Be sure to char the points when you're done. That'll make the wood harder, less likely to splinter when it hits.
Whittling away, the men nodded, as shavings curled under the blades, and fell quietly to the floor.
This'll give us 22 arrows.
Ryan drew his blaster and checked the clip.
Anybody ever used one before?
Sure.
Jack flicked a lighter into life. Holding the sharp tip of an arrow over the flame, he let the wood get black, then removed it quickly and doused it in the water. The difference between making it hard and setting it on fire was a matter of split seconds. A crossbow was how he had gotten his first blaster. It caught a Mercy in the throat, and he finished him off with a rock. Jack got the dead man's blaster.
How about you, Doc?
J.B. slid on an old pair of fingerless gloves. He had taken them off to do the lathing and machine work, but they were going into the unknown, and he wanted to be ready for a fight. Anything could be beyond that door. Any damn thing at all. Pausing in his carving, Doc raised an eyebrow.
Swords and handguns were the chosen weapons of my day. Arrows were considered weapons of the Red Indians of the plains.
Mighty deadly in their hands.
Ryan remembered a terrible day in the Western Plains when the companions almost hadn't survived.
Trader used to say that some triple stoop bastard with a blaster would always get aced easy by a smart man armed with just a club.
The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Although a slightly garbled translation.
Doc put another finished arrow aside. Ryan shrugged.
Just common sense.
Well, I took an archery class in high school, but that was a long time ago.
Ryan slid the heavy weapon across the table.
Good enough. You two are the archers, then.
Lifting the slab of wood and steel, Mildred inspected the crude weapon. The stock was cut from a desk, the crossmember attached with heavy bolts stolen from some piece of machinery. The trigger was a simple lever underneath that was to be pressed upward against the stock to release the catch. Grabbing the string, she pulled it backward until it locked on the catch with a solid click. Sliding an arrow between the notches, she shook the crossbow until the shaft fell out. Then Mildred did it all over and over again, until she could draw and load with a minimum of fuss. Nobody asked what she was doing.
Should we have dinner, then hit the tunnel?
Tunnel first.
The soup was keeping them alive, but as their hunger lessened, so did its flavor.
We don't know what's on the other side of that door. Could be a nice straight tunnel or a freaking maze. We need some way to make a map so we don't get lost, and there should be some way for us to mark the branches just in case.
Christy stood.
I saw some pencils and paper in the chief cook's office. Those should do.
She crossed the room and disappeared into a small office.
Any spray paint?
Mildred slung the crossbow over her shoulder. It was clumsy, but she could manage the weight. Removing his hat, J.B. wiped off the sweatband with a cloth.
No paint. I found a case of aerosol cans, but they were all dried out or had burst apart.
Shit. Worst redoubt we've ever been in.
Doc handed Mildred a full quiver. The physician slung it over her other shoulder, but the draw was awkward, so she shifted positions until satisfied. Jack gestured with his crossbow.
Blackboard in kitchen. Chalk, maybe?
Christy returned with the writing materials.
I checked and it's gone, and the markers are completely dried out.
Ryan placed the empty stire on the table.
Well, you spent brass to mark our way. Everybody bring along a handful. Leave everything else behind. With luck, we'll be carrying things back here and don't want to be overloaded.
Dad, who stays behind?
Frowning, Ryan realized the boy was right. The cellar door bolted from inside the redoubt. While they were in the tunnel, something might somehow creep into the base. They needed a rear guard.
Want the job?
No prob.
Good man.
Ryan patted the boy on the shoulder.
Nobody else I'd rather have guarding my back than another Carter.
The young boy preened under the praise, then his usual serious expression returned. Dean was a seasoned fighter, and most barons were guarded by sekmen with far less fighting experience. JB passed him a couple of Molotovs.
Here, we'll leave you these. Watch for splatter. These babies are messy. Grease and alcohol aren't exactly a prime mix.
Check.
Dean rummaged in a pocket. He found a butane lighter and flicked it, adjusting the flame to its highest setting. In his opinion, these were the only wonders of the pre-dark world worth having. Bullets got used and were gone, candles melted, light bulbs burned out, but the Sig lighter survived the 100 years of radiation intact, and each was good for over 1,000 times. Once he'd cooked a small rabbit over just the flame of a butane lighter. It made the meat taste odd, but he lived for another day. Taking a torch, Ryan stuffed a plastic bag full of extra greasy rags into a pocket.
Ready?
Damn near.
JB stood. The carpet bag over his shoulder clicked from the Molotovs, and he opened the flap to stuff in some more cloth rags to keep down the noise.
Half a league, half a league, half a league onward.
Don't finish that.
Kipling was a good poet, but a damn poor military advisor. Going to the bottom level of the redoubt, the companions gathered before the armored door and assumed combat positions. Going to the stairs, Dean readied a Molotov in case the others needed cover.
No more than 2 torches at a time.
Ryan set fire to his with a butane lighter. Oddly, the flame was weak, and he realized the Sig lighter was almost exhausted. Not good.
I'm on point. JB, cover the rear.
Gotcha.
The armorer ignited his own rag torch. Dense black smoke rose from the crackling flames, the smoke crawling along the ceiling like a living thing. Dean shifted position on the stairs to get out of its way.
Remember the codes?
Dean nodded.
When I ask who's there, only open the door if you give your real name. Albert, Alvin, anything like that means it's an ambush. And don't open the door no matter what else you say. Any name like Roger or Ralph means run. I take the Mattrans and go.
Immediately.
Yes, Dad. Immediately.
The Deathlands warrior grimaced. There were more codes they had created over the years, but these were the only ones appropriate for this situation. Open the door or not open the door. That's all there really was.
Okay. Open it.
Ryan drew his blaster, using a thumb to snick off the safety. Doc threw the bolt, and the others lent a hand to heave the massive door aside. The cellar light illuminated a section of tunnel that stretched into the blackness. The floor was worn smooth, and arches made of the same black metal as the exterior of the redoubt supported the ceiling at regular spacings. Empty hoops along the wall showed where power cables should have been attached to lights. Mildred studied the details of the braces.
Damn fine workmanship. Wonder what it was for.
Find out soon enough.
Ryan extended his torch and entered the darkness. The companions followed in close order. Pausing at the door, JB took a breath and walked through. Many years earlier, he had been trapped for days underground with a rotting corpse. Tunnels and caves weren't his favorite places. The torches crackled noisily, throwing dancing light along the rocky passageway for several yards. then, a shadow on the floor didn't dissolve under the light, but instead turned and charged with claws snapping.
Muti!
Ryan lowered his torch. Blinded by the light, the creature hissed loudly but kept on coming. Shooting from the hip, Ryan blew